Hello and welcome to Liberal Lockdown, Working Liberal Democrats podcast, all about working's response to the current pandemic. I'm Adam.
And I'm Louise. In this episode, we explore mental health, sharing how we've stayed mentally healthy during lockdown and beyond, and interviewing our special guest, who will give us an insight into how this important topic is developing during the pandemic, both locally and nationally, and providing advice about what we can all do to support ourselves and each other.
Whether you've been shielding, furloughed, made redundant, homeschooling, or working harder than ever before, life has certainly changed a lot for all of us in 2020.
Yes, a friend of mine said, we're not all in the same boat, but we're in the same storm, which I think brilliantly expresses where we all are at this time. Everyone's having such different experiences that it's sometimes hard to be on the same page as each other. Personally, knowing that many people are grieving loved ones and struggling through unemployment made it hard to talk about how I've felt during hard periods, as it seems trivial in comparison.
I know what you mean. Sometimes it's the little things that send you over the edge, though. Being cooped up within the same four walls for months on end with no change of scenery or company, it can do that to you. It's understandable.
Yes, indeed. But also the enormity of this global crisis can lead to feelings of anxiety and helplessness. Worries about the future and jobs and family members all play on our minds. Adam, what has worked for you in staying mentally positive?
Well, actually, I've spent a lot of time working and then working for Lib Dems. And that's a lot of time at the moment because you can't go out. That means a lot of time in front of a computer. And I do that in lots of different, in all areas of my life. And I'm sitting still. I'm not going anywhere. So I haven't been very good at that. But when I have made the time and I have gone out just for a walk or spend a bit of time just cooking something special or occasionally come for a jog, but very rarely, then that I have noticed that I felt better. So probably I need to do more of that. But when I have done just the small things that people recommend you do, I've noticed the difference.
Me too. I found routine being really helpful for me and my family. We all get on better when we know what's coming next in the day. And I've actually also found making this podcast has been fantastic for getting my self-confidence back after feelings of, inertia and powerlessness during lockdown. I need projects to stay sane.
Yes, I think being busy helps some people. And I guess it's been a form of therapy, actually, to talk about and explore various elements of the crisis for each episode. Yeah. So welcome to Distraction for me. And let's introduce our guest for the show, who will fill us in on Woking's mental health picture.
Our guest today has built a successful and varied career in the business world, as well as the voluntary sector. He's specialised in the management, strategy, marketing and people development of various blue chip companies, including Thomas Cook, WH Smith and Nestle. He also has an MBA from London Business School. In the voluntary sector, he's supported a range of larger and smaller not-for-profit organisations. More recently, today's guest has taken on the role of chief executive at Woking Mind, where he's able to use his vast experience to support and develop provision for mental health locally, leading them through what we're about to hear has been a turbulent time with lessons for all of us. Welcome to Liberal Lockdown, Tony Bennett.
Thank you. Good to be here.
First of all, for those who are less familiar with the work of Mind and what the organisation does, what is its role and what's the role of Mind here in Woking?
Well, Mind really consists of two very different parts. You've got a very large national organisation based out of London whose role is very strategic. It's very much about building awareness about mental health. It's very much about influencing government and about trying to make sure that the environment is created in which we can look to solve as many of the mental health problems that the overall nation faces as possible. Then, as well as National Mind, you've got over 100 locally federated minds, each of which are independent charities and each of which looks to support their own community in whatever is the best way for that community. So if you looked at a local mind in, say, Newcastle, or a local mind even in somewhere like Croydon, you would find that the range of services might be very different from those that we offer here in Woking. And that's driven by local demand and local need.
Sure. And in what kind of situations do you support people day to day here in our town?
Well, it's really very broad ranging. Some of the people we support, and indeed the, if you like, historical basis of Woking Mind, was to look after those who had long-term mental health needs. We did that primarily through a drop-in service in our headquarters in Courtney Road in Woking. And that has been operating in a number of different bases, but currently in Courtney Road for about 40 years. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, we offer a wide range of other services, which really go from everything to do with awareness about mental health and mental illness, through activities to prevent it, early intervention, and then at the end of the process, helping people maintain recovery. So if you imagine a pyramid of mental health issues, where at the top are those which are the most challenging, where often the people might need to be long-term residents of mental health institutions, that's the top of the pyramid. Mm-hmm. We operate in the sort of the two levels at the bottom of the pyramid, primarily with less serious mental health needs, but sometimes looking after people either in the early or later stages of their journey through a mental health challenge.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that mental health is something that's understood well enough yet nationally and locally?
No, absolutely not. It's one of the big problems with mental health. If you take physical health, whether you're looking at something from a very trivial thing like a light cold, or you're talking about something very serious and potentially terminal like cancer, or today COVID-19, mm-hmm. people have actually got a pretty good understanding about physical health. But with mental health, there is nowhere near that degree of certainty. And indeed, a lot of people are almost resistant to the whole idea of mental illness and see it as almost like a sign of weakness to say that they've got anything that might be badged under that term. So there is mm-hmm. a massive need to educate people that actually, if they are feeling very anxious, if they are feeling stressed more than day to day, but you know, over a sustained period of time, that is actually an illness. That is actually something which is a significant problem, which if it is not treated in some way, if it's not supported in some way, is unlikely to go away. But equally, with treatment and with support, people have got an excellent chance of making a very good recovery and actually being able to adjust back into a much more normal way of life.
And you've been the chief executive, if we're right, of Woking Mind for just over a year. So what drew you to that originally, that role?
Louise very kindly sort of went through some elements of my career before. And I think the most common theme of all is looking to help organizations to change and to grow through a combination of strategy and people management. Mm-hmm. And what really appealed to me about Woking Mind was that this was an organization that was desperately trying to help people. Whatever their need, it was there to try and find a solution for it. But as an organization, Woking Mind very definitely needed to change. It had remained a quite small charity with a very tight focus in a world in which increasingly small charities who are heavily dependent on funding from government were mm-hmm. struggling. And so really, whenever I started talking to the trustees at Woking Mind, the issue was, look, either we have to grow or we have to close. There really is no option to continue as we are now. And so my challenge was to come in and to look for ways, hopefully, to grow the organization or else to recommend to the trustees that closure was right. Fortunately, we've been able to dramatically grow the organization even over the course of a year, although the first part of that was for quite a sad reason, which is that many people will know of another mental health and charity charity in Woking called Corner House, which actually mm-hmm. operated out of the same same building in Courtney Road. And unfortunately, they hit a range of problems almost exactly at the time I joined Woking Mind. and their trustees decided that they had to close because they thought there was no way around the problems which they had hit. Now, we were able, in fact, to then take on all the services and all the staff of Corner House. So that from the point of view of the people, the service users who've been using Corner House, they saw very little change. Mm. It was literally almost like a change in the letterhead, but the same people were helping them in the same ways. But it did mean that we as an organization almost tripled overnight in size. And we've continued, that happened in November of last year. And since then, we've been continuing to add on new services and continuing to grow, particularly as a result of the increased mental health needs because of COVID-19.
Sure. And how have different groups of people been affected differently during the pandemic, would you say?
There are a very wide range of differences. First of all, there's a whole new group of people who are experiencing anxiety and stress to a greater extent than they ever have before. There are some people, particularly perhaps those who are highly social, and many of these, including many young people, who have found the constraints of being in lockdown incredibly difficult to cope with. And stress and anxiety levels amongst the young have been particularly rising. And those are, in many cases, with people who would never have had any significant symptoms before. Mm-hmm. There's another very important group who have really lost access to services as a result of COVID-19. And I think these are perhaps some of the biggest challenges that we face within the mental health community. And these are people who have got very limited access to technology. They may not even have a phone. And if they have a phone, they're only, you know, used to using it in the most basic way. They certainly don't have a smartphone. Mm-hmm. They may also be very uncomfortable using the phone, even if they have one. And as a result of COVID-19, almost overnight, our operations, which had been 100% face-to-face, had to go 100% by telephone and by use of video technology such as Zoom. Now, for many people, that has provided a wonderful level of support. But for those who are without the technology, those who are without phones, it has actually been incredibly difficult and in many cases impossible to keep in touch and support them. And certainly if we do think that we're going to be in an environment where we're likely to get a major second wave over winter, these are a group that we need to find new ways of being able to access and new means of supporting.
So how have you adapted the services then, apart from just doing things remotely? Are there any solutions that immediately have sort of sprung up, or is it going to take much more thinking?
Actually, one of the most amazing things, now I think this is true of an awful lot of the commercial and charity world, is the speed with which organizations have adapted has been quite remarkable. I've spoken to a number of people who say that they've made changes to the way in which they work, which in normal circumstances might have taken years to happen, and they've happened in a matter of weeks. That's particularly true, for instance, of organizations like Woking Mind, who everybody was used to coming into the office to do their job. To all intents and purposes, the office has been closed since March, and everybody is actually working from home. So, and that change actually took place virtually overnight. And very, very quickly, certainly within a matter of a couple of weeks, we were discovering Zoom technology. Mm. And I mean, it's really interesting. It's March is only about 4 months ago. And in March, I had never heard of Zoom. And yet both myself and many other people in my team spend half our lives on Zoom at the moment. And it is a huge blessing in the current circumstances, because it is far easier to engage properly with people if you can look at them as well as if you can hear them. And from that point of view, adapting the services so that we can use phones to contact people, we can use Zoom to run groups in the way that we used to run groups physically, face-to-face, has been wonderful and has brought a new group of people into using our services. And it's actually been I think, almost a bit of a revelation, really. We've discovered, for instance, that there are people who are so reluctant to leave their home that they would find it almost impossible to come to our offices to join a group, but they are quite willing to join a group over Zoom. And so we're actually able to offer a service there, which, in all honesty, there is no doubt at all, even if COVID was to disappear tomorrow, which sadly it will not, but even if it was, we would continue to use Zoom as one of the platforms that we use to deliver services, because it reaches people who our other services just weren't able to reach.
It's a silver lining.
It is a silver lining.
Yeah.
So that's what we've done in terms of delivering the stuff, which is, if you like, similar to what we were doing before, but is simply trying to find a new way of delivering it, whether it's by phone or by Zoom. But what we've also done is we've discovered that there was a new need, which if it existed at all before COVID, it has certainly grown massively since. And that is that there are a lot of people who are suffering from anxiety and stress for the first time. These people are now, as a first port of call, quite naturally, they think of GP. If you think of ill health, the first thing you tend to think of is your GP. And unfortunately, it's been an incredibly challenging time for GPs. And they have really found it very difficult to cope with the large increase in calls that they're getting about mental health issues. And one of the things that, again, is different about mental health compared with physical health is that GPs these days are set up for having 10 and 15 minute appointments. It is almost impossible to have a sensible mental health conversation, particularly the first one that you have with somebody where you're trying to learn and understand it. It's almost impossible to do that in 10 to 15 minutes. So we had discussions with the GPs, and out of that has come a program which we call Community Wellbeing Calls. That is CWC program, we call it. And basically what is happening is that increasingly GPs are giving their patients their number, or they're referring our number, or they're referring those people to us and saying, call Working Mind. And we then assess their needs. And we then start, first of all, with a lengthy phone conversation with them to understand exactly what their support is, support needs are. And we then provide a range of suggestions to them as to what support we can offer them on an ongoing basis. And we're delivering this in a unique way, in that we're doing it through a combination of professional staff who've been with us for some time, but backed up by a large number of well-trained volunteers who were training specifically to be able to handle these community wellbeing calls.
Are there any other challenges, not just for GPs, but any other partners that you have locally?
I think that one of the problems is that that while on the one hand you've got a lot of people who are feeling anxious and who have the need for support, there are some of those people, and indeed even some people who were already in the system, who were already getting treatment and support, have taken the view that that's no longer available to them, if you like, because of the impact of COVID-19. And very often that isn't the case. It's not true that it's not available, but they just think in their own mind that it's not available. And so they literally don't make contact with the provider that they've been working with, and actually their treatment slips by, and they can face the new challenges of not having the support that they've been used to previously. So there's a wide range of different issues that affect different people, but the net impact of the whole thing is that there's a very significant increase in the need for mental health support within the community.
And what long-term impacts will the past few months have on our mental health, do you believe, and the new normal, so to speak?
Oh, I do not like this phrase, the new normal. Oddly enough, somebody used it today. I was talking to somebody, and they said, "I will not let this be the new normal. This is not acceptable. This is not a life that we can live So we have to find a way to shape it. Whatever the virus is going to do, which we may have limited ways of controlling, we have to find ways to, not necessarily to go back the way we were, but to find ways which would mean that what we're doing now is not the new normal.
Yes, yeah.
So from that point of view, in terms of the longer term, I think the reality is we don't really know exactly what the long-term implications are. What we do know is that the mental health challenges are changing as the months go by. So mm-hmm. if you went back to the first few months, people actually adjusted pretty well to being in lockdown. And I think a lot of that was because it was reasonably new and people can cope with a lot of change in the short term. Mm-hmm. I think it was also because the rules were very simple. You know, it was stay at home, only go out for three very limited reasons. Mm-hmm. And it was people who had a lot of clarity as to what it was they were being asked to do, and it was easy to follow. Now, yeah. the level of confusion that there is about what you are supposed to do is massive and seems only likely to get worse. So people are now not sure, should we be going to work, back to work, or should we not be going to back to work? Mm-hmm. How is that going to, if I'm perhaps vulnerable physically, what does that mean for me? Is my employer entitled to insist I go back to work, or is it my choice whether I go back to work? So they've now got a lot of decisions to make. And I think the evidence suggests that having those decisions is actually making people more anxious and more stressed. And sadly, the other thing which we anticipate and are already beginning to see the early signs of is a significant increase in people being made redundant, being made unemployed, becoming unemployed, and all the stresses and strains that that brings, often with limited access to the resources that they would normally turn to in that situation. So sadly, the short to medium term forecast is that there will be even greater mental health challenges coming over the course of the next 3 to 6 months than there have been over the last 3 to 6 months.
Yeah. It is a worrying time, isn't it?
It is a worrying time, but I think that the main thing that we would urge people is to talk about their anxiety. I think if there's one thing that's really important, is that the worst thing you can do is to bottle up your anxiety in your own head, is to let mm-hmm. those thoughts and worries and concerns keep circling around in your own mind. And there are a whole range of people that you can talk to, and you should choose carefully who you talk to. But do find somebody that you can trust and somebody that you feel will listen well to your concerns and won't be judgmental about how you feel. Because what I feel is one of the very best sayings of all is the saying that a problem shared is a problem halved. And that opening up to somebody about the challenges that you've got, that is the start to recovery.
Yeah, well, I was just about to ask you actually about practical advice. And what advice would you give to any of our listeners who feel as if they need support right now? I mean, how can they access help and what steps can they take themselves?
Well, I think that Google, if we're allowed to promote Google, is our friend as far as this is concerned. In the best thing to do is to go onto Google and put in words like mental health support, the name Woking, if you're living in Woking or where you are, and see what comes up by way of local support numbers. Mm-hmm. I think that for some people, the natural protocol for that is to their GP, and they should phone their GP and explain that they've got feelings of anxiety, and then the GP will be able to either help them themselves or suggest where they should turn. And certainly here in the sort of really the whole of Northwest Surrey area, we would urge people to look up Woking Mind online, find our number. And if you call our number, which is advertised on our website, we will always do our best to suggest the best path forward for you. And always happy to talk to people, always happy to suggest where the best pathway may be for them.
And are people aware enough for when they might need to put more focus on their mental health?
Yeah, I think that is a real problem, because it's not, you know, if you break your leg, you know you've got a problem. You know, you may not be 100% sure if it's actually broken, but you know there's a real problem and you need to see a doctor and get some treatment for it. We don't have anything as neat that measures, if you like, mental health in that way. But the sort of thing I would say is that if you find yourself feeling panicky for 2 or 3 days in a row and you're not able to throw it off, that's a very good sign of anxiety, and that you're finding it difficult to cope and you're worried about the future. Equally, if you're finding it's very difficult to get out of bed, and obviously a lot of people now aren't at work and may be furloughed or whatever, or may even worse have been made redundant. If you're finding it very difficult to get out of bed, to get up and go and do some exercise, that thing, again, that's a major sign that you've got depression. And in those cases where you're just seeing signs that you're, the way you behave is different from the way you normally are, it's that change. You may be becoming more irritable. If you've got family around, whether it be a partner or a kid, you may find that you're less tolerant of them. And my goodness, that's easy enough in a lockdown situation where you're with people many more hours a day than you used to be. But the other really important thing is that you can help other people spot it in themselves. Yeah. It doesn't have, you don't have to leave it to the individual. Now, these aren't necessarily easy conversations to have, but they're important conversations to have. If you suspect that you're seeing in somebody that you know quite well, again, whether it's family or whether it's friend or a colleague at work, you're seeing those signs of irritability, short temper, that people are a bit panicky, they perhaps haven't turned up, or any of those sort of signs. You know, the best thing to do is simply to ask them, are they all right? How are they feeling? Mm-hmm. Now, 90% of the time, if you ask somebody, are you all right? They will come back and say, oh, yeah, sure. No, I'm not having a great day, but I'm okay. However, if you go back in again and say, are you sure you're all right? And go back in a second time and say, you know, I'm a bit concerned about you because, and you sort of give them a couple of the signals that you've seen that they may not be their normal selves. It is amazing how high a percentage of the time that opens the floodgates. And that really encourages people to either to just let the whole thing out and talk openly about it, or at least to admit that they've got a problem. And then you can suggest them, even if they won't open up to you for whatever reason, because of, you're perhaps too close to them and they don't feel comfortable opening up something close, you can then suggest they do contact other people to talk about it. Always remembering that anybody who's got a mental health problem, the very best thing they can do is to talk to somebody about it. And if it's not going to be you, just make sure it's somebody else.
So I guess we all need to be aware of our family, our friends, our colleagues, and be checking in on each other.
I think that's right, because I think now it is reasonable to actually ask the question of all those people, are you normal? Are you as you normally are? Are you more stressed, more anxious than you've been? Because there is so much going on around us, and there are so... almost everybody is living a very different life to the one that they were living before the middle of March. And that most people don't like change at the end of the day. And a lot of the change is very negative change. And therefore, it would be very surprising for a lot of people they weren't having some degree of challenge. Not everybody, not all the time, but it's certainly sensible to keep eyes open to see how all those people, your family, your friends, your colleagues, how they're doing.
And Tony, is there anything we can do to become better at recognising the importance of mental health as a society or as a town in Woking? I suppose it's going up the agenda, but have people changed their attitudes enough?
Changed their attitudes, definitely, yes. And I think people like the Royal Family have actually played a really big role in doing that. They've helped to make the whole situation much more high profile and create a positive level of awareness. Has it changed enough? Definitely not. And the biggest problem is still this one, that people are reluctant to accept that they have got any form of mental illness, to the extent that very often we won't actually use those words. We will talk about people being anxious or people being stressed and needing support, but actually not badge it as being mental illness. So we talk a lot more in a positive way about wanting to encourage well-being. And so we would now almost always use the phrase mental health and well-being and put the focus much more on how do we maximize your well-being rather than how do we solve a problem of illness.
Sure.
And people seem to find it much easier to cope with that more positive imagery than of actually the more negativity of talking about illness.
I think a lot of people are used to a certain level of unhappiness and difficulty in their lives, aren't they? They assume that it's normal and it's acceptable to live that way. But to present them with how can we make you feel better? How can we improve your well-being? It's a spin on it, isn't it? That makes them see it from a different
light. And apart from anything else, it is very action-oriented. It suggests that you should do something different rather than coping with the way things are now. And yeah. That idea of actually working out a pathway to do something different is a very, very positive way of looking at things.
So what would you say to somebody who's got, I suppose, a practical problem? Maybe they're worried about losing their job or they might have housing problems. Maybe the easy response to them might feel like, okay, I'll focus on that problem. So how does mental health come into that? Because presumably there's a way that they can feel better about things. But what would you say to somebody who wants to just focus on the practicalities instead?
That's entirely right. And the normally what you have to do is to approach it, if you take it as a two-sided coin, it's just most simplistic. One, there is a genuine problem, let's say redundancy. And secondly, there is the anxiety and so on that is causing. And so basically, on the practical side, there are a number of people out there who can help you with any particular problem that you have. So there are organizations who can support you in helping to look at careers advice and so on. Mm-hmm. In many of these cases, a natural first point of call is the Citizens Advice Bureau, who offer a wonderful service. For some people, particularly those who've got the most complex problems, there are people who are called social prescribers who are in Woking are based through Woking Borough Council. And some of them are based at the council, some of them are based out in GP surgeries, and they are trained to help people with a complex range of needs, some of which may be financial, some of which may be employment, some of which may be housing oriented or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they are the specialists, if you like, at complexity. And then you look to address the anxiety. And there are a range of online resources that you can turn to on things such as mindfulness and so on, or you contact somebody, you get in touch with somebody like your GP, like Woking Mind, and you actually ask them, what is the best support for me? And more often than not, that is the best course to take. But apart from anything else, it encourages you to talk about what your challenges are. And that is the first step to recovery.
Thank you. Yeah. And to finish, as we look to the future, how can people support Woking Mind, whether that be through volunteering, donating or otherwise?
Well, we are a voluntary organisation. We sort of literally start every year with nothing in the kitty other than whatever reserves we've managed to build up the previous year. So certainly any form of donations or running events. We had a wonderful event recently where a number of people organised a run, and they got all their friends on to sponsor it. And out of that, they've donated to us over £8,000, which is an amazing and wonderful thing to have done. But whether it's £8 or £80 or whatever, we're very grateful for anything. If you go on our website, it tells you how you can donate to us. So donations are always welcome, but volunteers are also very welcome. And again, on our website, you will see details. We have a volunteer coordinator who is aware of all the sorts of volunteers that we need and the things we can do. And we need lots and lots of different skills in terms of volunteering. And one of the very great things about mental health is that particularly those who either themselves or through their family have had some form of what we call lived experience, they've had their own practical mental health challenges. The number of those people who want to give back in some way, who actually want to help other people who may be facing similar challenges, is quite amazing, and more so than any other charitable sector with which I've been involved. So certainly we warmly welcome volunteers as much as we warmly welcome donations. Equally, sometimes physical things can be useful. We're going to try and get our building refurbished. We're going to need some new furniture to put in that building. So perhaps if offices are downsizing because they're no longer bigger and you've got spare chairs and tables and things like that, we could well find a very good home for those too.
Well, I hope that people get in touch with you about some of those things, Tony. That would be a great outcome from the podcast.
It would indeed.
It's just one more question. If you had to give one message for anyone who's listening to this podcast, what would that be?
If you are feeling anxious or if you're feeling depressed, find somebody to talk to, whether it be a friend, a member of the family, a colleague, a GP, phoning Woking Mind. Please, please talk to somebody. Don't try and cope with it on your own.
Well, thank you for your time. And for anyone here in Woking who'd like to get in touch with Woking Mind or just have a look at the website, we'll include the link in our show notes. And thank you for joining us, Tony.
Thanks, Tony.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Well, it is very reassuring to know that Woking's stepping up its mental health provision at such an important time and that Tony's there to continue to grow Woking Mind as the needs increase. I'm sure they will.
Yes, and there are challenges ahead for sure, but lots of positive action going on, such as the use of technology to reach those who would not traditionally have accessed help. I was very impressed with that joined up system to support GPs in providing access to mental health services.
Yes, another example of the coronavirus catalysing the linking of services. That service wouldn't have been possible without the team of volunteers though, so a huge thank you to anyone volunteering in the mental health sector.
Yes, it was really interesting to hear about how the crisis is affecting young people locally too. Young people already had quite a hard time accessing mental health support before the crisis, and early intervention in any kind of problem is so important. I know the Lib Dems are calling for mental health maximum waiting time standards to address this, actually.
Yeah, I love the Lib Dem policy on mental health. Earmarked funding for this sector is so important. They also advocate a health in all policies approach, which means that national and local decision making, policies and interventions will only take place after the full impact on people's mental and physical health has been fully assessed. All too often, mental health impacts are overlooked when decisions are being made. But on a serious note, with further unemployment looming, there is sure to be a greater demand for mental health provision.
Yes, and sadly, there is a strong link between financial debt and suicide. Over 100,000 people in problem debt attempting suicide every year. That's a shocking statistic to actually see that. And so the need to support those facing debt, both practically and emotionally, is vital.
Yeah, this is such a difficult episode, as it's so hard to explore the issues in full without potentially adding to listeners' anxiety in the process. What's the quote I'm looking for? Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to accept the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah, exactly. We can't solve the world's problems, but it doesn't mean we can't take action. I think Tony's focus on well-being and positive use of language was really interesting. I guess it's all about taking small positive steps, the first of which should always be to talk about it.
Yes, definitely. One of the things I'm taking away from today's podcast is the need to ask people about their mental health. Maybe this crisis has also been a catalyst for making this conversation easier to have.
Yes, and I thought his advice there was really important to say, how are you? Are you okay? And then say, really, are you okay? If you thought that maybe that was needed. And once again, I think that the importance of community has come to the fore. It's all our responsibilities. It's everyone who needs to look out for each other, particularly during this particularly mentally challenging time.
Yes, definitely. A great note to finish on. As Tony said, a problem shared is a problem halved. Talk to someone if you're not feeling yourself. or call Woking Mind on 07801 931 831.
We'd love to hear from you about any of the topics covered so far or ideas for future episodes. Please find our contact details in the show notes, along with useful links to mental health services. Stay safe and thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye.